Hello and welcome to another episode of A Conversation with a Black Businesswoman with me, your host, Lillian Oliveri from Kale Accountancy, based in South London. Well, in today's episode, we have the remarkable and amazing Antoinette Daniels from a company based in London called Just Helpers. She is such a phenomenal person, a phenomenal human being. Her story is amazing. I think I am just so blessed and grateful for all these phenomenal women who are coming on my podcast, sharing their stories, sharing their journey of how they started business. If you want to know more about Antoinette Daniels, just go on LinkedIn, look her up, and see her posts about even how she started off in care, her life stories, a snippet of her life story, I should say. But in this podcast, yeah, it was just phenomenal. It was just amazing. I could have talked to her for hours. But we, of course, had to cut it short. But yeah, but just a phenomenal woman. I keep saying that. So without any further delay, let's jump into this episode with Antoinette Daniel. Hi, and welcome to another episode of A Conversation with a Black Businesswoman with me, your host, Lillian Oliveri from Kale Accountancy Limited. And today we have the lovely Antoinette from Just Helpers, Antoinette Daniel. And she's an amazing woman. I was referred to her by another networker as they knew I did podcasts. And when I looked it up and I thought, oh my gosh, this lady has such an amazing story. I can't wait to dig in. Hi, Antoinette.
Hi, so excited to be here.
But yeah, thank you so, so much for joining the podcast. So let's jump right in. So you run a company called Just Helpers, which yes. is a cleaning company based in London.
Yes, exactly that. My goodness, you need to go on my marketing. So we're a cleaning agency based in London for now, with plans for world domination, but we're not there yet.
But the reason why I think I was drawn to your story, I think you posted something, I don't know how long ago it was, because the algorithm on LinkedIn is quite weird in that if you follow someone, it brings up all their historical posts sometimes at random points when you go in. So it showed me a video like how... Basically, explain to us how you got started. Because one of the captions on your video was, I started from £10 and now you have a revenue of over 1.2 million, I think it is.
Yes. Yeah. So, gosh, the business was like, we celebrated our 10-year anniversary in December. And prior to starting a business, I was a PE teacher. So I taught PE for over 15 years and I thought I'd retire doing that. And you know, I was made for it. And eventually I started to hear about human trafficking as modern slavery.
Yeah.
And that was just a whole revolution to me. And if I can be really candid, like I heard about it one Sunday in church and there was a sort of white, middle-aged, middle-class guy standing up to say, you know, today it's slavery, anti-slavery Sunday, and we're going to be talking about the transatlantic slave trade. And there was just a bit of a voice inside of me that was like, what are you really going to bring to me about the transatlantic slave trade? So I was feeling a little bit arrogant. And so he, you know, respectfully shared the history and the responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And then just blew my mind with this statistic, which was over... the entire the transatlantic slave trade spanned 400 years, but in the 1 hour that we were sat in church, there were more people trafficked in that 1 hour than there were in the entirety of the slave trade.
Oh, wow.
And he said that the number then was 27.9 million people enslaved at that point, and I couldn't believe it. So that just derailed my life in the end. I went to research that fact because I thought he was exaggerating. It turned out that that wasn't the case, and I immersed myself in stories about trafficking. And so I eventually left teaching, sold my house, like it was a massive life change, planned to go to Bible college and be a missionary in India because that seemed to be where things were going down. And just for a long old story, ended up interning in the UK for an awareness raising charity that had on the ground work in all sorts of countries around the world. And actually, that's where I really cut my teeth and really where I understood that to make effective change anywhere, you needed three key things. You needed the rule of law to be secure. So government and officials and policing system, all that needed to be settled. You needed education for the public so that they weren't vulnerable to whatever it is. And then you needed a sort of social security system almost that could help to recover and help people recover from whatever exploitation they'd been experiencing. So fast forward, I then got a job, a paid part-time paid role in a borough in London to help raise awareness around trafficking. And that at that point I was on a salary that was not even a third, I think, of my teaching salary, and only part-time. And so I needed some money on the side, and that's how the cleaning business was started. I thought that it was just going to be a little side hustle where I could go, be invisible, not be headhunted, spotted, talent spotted, any of it. I wouldn't be managing any people. I would just go do my thing, put my headphones in, have a sing, listen to a podcast, and go on my merry way and do this to this charity. And so that's how it started. And I literally, I'd had a month of signing on. I've never signed on as an adult. I've just been fortunate that I've been able to move from job to job, particularly in teaching. But for about 6 months, I was unemployed, and I'd got some leftover money from the house, and that was running away. And I just realised I probably need to sign on. I was sofa surfing with a friend at that point. So I signed on for a month, and in that time the job came up to work for the anti-charity. I'd already made my mind up about the cleaning to supplement that income, so it only needed to be a month. But they had this scheme for people that had businesses, and they said, if you want to start a business, we could support you for 6 months and give you a little bit of extra money. And I think it was like £60 a week, and then dwindling to £30 a week for the last 3 months. So by the time I'd sort of paid my friend for food and all the little things, I basically had around a tenner left every week. And that £10 got me to my first cleaning client. That was travel money, petrol money. Got my cash in hand, and I had a three tin system at that point. I'd put my tax money in. I didn't even know I didn't need to pay tax then. You didn't. I was way under the threshold. Tax money, so bill money, and then earnings money. And so each week I would just kind of keep filling up those tins, but it took from £10 initially, just that very fast turnover of cash, and that built over time.
Yeah.
A very long answer, sorry.
No, that's amazing. I'm just sitting there like in amazement, like, oh my gosh, you've done so much in that short space of time, just like moving, selling your house, wanting to go to trafficking. I mean, it isn't something, maybe because, I don't know, sometimes you feel like you live a sheltered life sometimes, and because if you're sheltered, then you information is available, but it's almost like, is it a case of, I just want to, for example, just want to close my eyes to certain things and pretend like it doesn't exist until I see a movie or until I see something and go, oh yeah, that exists. Oh my gosh, I feel sorry. And then carry on with life. So I think until it's, like you say, there's changing governmental bodies and they make a real effort to bring this to light, to make effective change, continuous effective change. And I think for me, sometimes I feel like you are in a bubble, that information, unless someone's bringing it to you.
Yes.
So I think that's great that you were like, okay, this is something speaking to me in this in this talk that I need to do something about it. And it just shows so much of your character as well. Like, it's not a case of just listen and it goes in one ear and out the other. It's like, you know, being a listener but also a doer.
You're making me sound very noble, because that whole conversation that took 3 years. I heard it. I went away research. I thought, that's awful. Someone's got to do something about it, and parked it. It took 3 years really of hearing that message over and over and over again, of thinking, well, I'm doing my thing. You, Mr. Policeman, you need to do something. And really, after 3 years of what felt like God pursuing me with it, really, I reluctantly gave it to, you know, I was a very unwilling person. I've changed now. I've understood that when that sort of pressure comes, just get on with it and make the change or be the change. But yeah,
it was. I mean, what is it? I know we're talking about business and how you started, etc. But in terms of the trafficking, again, I don't really hear much about it in the press. But what do you feel like, is there been any improvement with in terms of like governmental participation or
massively pension? Massively in the last 15 to 20 years, I'm trying to think when I first started, nearly 20 years ago, we have things like an anti-trafficking commissioner, that's a role in the government and the police. There are all party parliamentary groups around it. Migration laws, I mean, even in the news this week, there's pushback from the Archbishop of Canterbury about the anti-migration law, because that will make people more vulnerable to trafficking and enslavement. So there's much more awareness now. Training across governmental bodies and emergency services is much more robust. So yes, lots of change has happened in that time.
So you started the cleaning company.
Yes.
Did you say that at the time, the agency, or was it the where you were signing on, they helped you set up a business at the time?
Job centre. It was a job centre scheme. And I think it still is as well. It's a sort of enterprise scheme. So for anyone out there, I mean, what was attractive to me was that they were supposed to give a mentor that would run alongside that to help you understand. And that bit didn't happen. And that bit is the bit that I really, really needed. I mean, a skill set like yours with finances and spreadsheets and accounting, I didn't understand any of that. And actually, that's a big piece of education that's missing from schools in terms of financial literacy. And to start a business with no financial or low financial literacy, caused us problems. It caused us massive problems down the line. And I would say really only at year eight was I able to start reversing some of the initial things that I hadn't really thought through properly.
But even the things that you mentioned, like when you said you were living at your friend's house and you had these different pots or tins, that's kind of something Profit First talks about, this book that I keep harping on about, and also which I tell my clients about or recommend to my clients about having different pots. And it's great with technology now with like mobile banking, you know, as opposed to a high street bank where you can do like mobile banking. You have your account, your business banking account or your personal account, and you have these different spaces or pots that you can put money aside towards your tax liabilities. So whether that's self-assessment or your corporation tax or your VAT, and put that money aside, because technically you're getting money in. All of it's not yours. And I think that's something that I think a lot of business people don't really understand, that they think, oh, I'm getting this money, I can spend it all. And then, and I've heard the stories where one prospective guy, I keep mentioning this, he did a consultation with me and he says, I don't understand it. My accountant's giving me my bill and I owe £20,000 in tax. I went, oh, do you not have the money then? He goes, I just don't know where this came from. I said, did you get monthly reports? No. Wow. He still went back to the original council, because it's that thing of, I'd rather stay with someone I know than leave. So he went back to the council. But I said, just ask for in future monthly reports. So at least on there you can see, and ask them to say what the provision for the corporation tax is, because that's an estimate that they should put in the accounts every month. So at least you can put something aside. He was just livid. But I don't understand how it's so much. My friends are in the same business and you know, they're paying less tax. I went, well, maybe they're doing something different. Maybe they're putting a lot of their money into pension pots through the company, so then they reduce their profit that way, so they'd pay less corporation tax. So they might be doing different things, and I don't know what their setup is. They might have more overheads. He was just like, I don't understand how this happened. So I think, like you say, I think one of my projects as well is to try and get into schools to do sessions with kids, young people as well, to say not everyone's academic. So it might be a case of you actually just want to leave and start a business, but you don't know what to do, where to go. So the next question that I was going to ask you, but you've answered really, is that at the start, there wasn't that support. Do you think, and because you do networking with women as well, and do workshops and away days, from what I can see on social media, do you find that some of these women that come to you had the same, still have the same problem where they set up business? Do they not have support?
It's a common problem. So yeah. I guess to kind of elaborate on my story. So I was fine while I was working by myself. You know, I'd got my mum's system of you've got to have your envelopes every month. So I kind of just adapted to that. But the challenge for me was when I started to take on people, and I hadn't expected or planned to take on people. The business just evolved that way. And I had no literacy really for how that worked. I didn't know how I was supposed to pay people. I didn't know. Actually, I didn't even really know that there was corporation tax that could be a possibility at the end of the year. Mm-hmm. So while I understood that there was VAT, but I didn't know that there was this whole other tax going on. Mm-hmm. Luckily, because I was putting VAT aside, which I didn't need to, that then could pay the corporate tax. But I just came up with so many problems, even looking at margins and looking at profit by net and by gross. These were just all things I didn't understand. So when I took on people, I was in pretty much trying to pay them what I had charged when I was a solo trader, whilst still also paying for equipment and marketing and transport of everyone. So eventually there was not even no profit in the business. There was negative equity because I was paying all the costs. By now I'd got two other part-time jobs. So they were sort of supplementing the business, and I was effectively running a charity, which I was the chief donator to. I find that when a lot of women come on board, the numbers are one of the things that really have them panicked, and the KPIs, or, you know, the indicators in their business that help them to understand how they're doing. It's not just numbers. It's about cash flow, forward cash flow. It's about what generates those things. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, we're all trying to turn a profit, but what generates those things in your business? What's increasing that? What's decreasing that? What vulnerabilities or liabilities might impact that further down the line? No one is thinking beyond today or this week or this month, or, you know, can I pay my rent? We get a lot of sole traders as women as well. And so, again, Profit First is one of the first books I read when I got a business coach. We are just so used to putting ourselves further down the chain. Everything gets paid before we think about paying ourselves. We are hardwired to pay the bills, pay the expenses, pay our suppliers before we pay ourselves, which is a very different mindset to the average guy out there. And so, yes, we do end up doing a lot of work with women around one, you know, your own financial goals. Let's start with that. Let's create a vision for that. Let's prioritize you in all of this. And then let's look at how everything else slots around it. You want to take people on. Can you actually do that now? Okay, if that's what you need, what do you need in place? How many clients? How many? So it's helping people form a bigger picture and not being afraid of things like spreadsheets, and encouraging people as soon as they can to outsource the stuff they don't know. So one of my first professionals, if you like, was an accountant in the end. The time that the first tax bill arrived, I was like, this is not for me. I need someone that can do this, because this can take businesses under if you don't understand it properly. And so for me, you know, I just looked at what can I afford. I found the cheapest accountant out there, not the best in the end, but as we grew, you know, my professional support grew as well.
And I think as well, unfortunately, the women that you probably come across, or who I've come across as well, is this issue of, and I've even encountered it as well, where you charge a fee and it's like, oh, you're a bit expensive.
Yes.
But if it was a guy, would you have the same question? And I think that is still something that business women, not even just black business women, but I think women in general still have an issue with. I don't know what it is about. It's okay. And it's even women as well with men. How you approach I will pay this guy this much for his services. And then I sit down and observe and I'm like, but he's not even providing the service.
Yes.
But you're paying him.
Yes.
I'm charging you this fee. Oh, that's a bit much.
Yes.
And, you know, not that this has happened with my clients, but just point that out there, but from observation, is a case of, I don't understand that mentality. And then the other thing I come across is, and I don't know if some of the women that you encounter, if it's because they're married, it's like, oh, it's almost seen like your business is not a business, it's a hobby.
Yes.
It's to do your nails, it's to go out. Yes. And I'm like, no, this is actually supplementing my household bills.
Yes.
You know, I still need to make money to pay for my bills. Do you have those issues with the women that you deal with at the workshops as well?
So particularly our married women, if they're within the first 5 years of their business starting, often there's been a resistance for them to A, come away with us, even if it's just for the day, but let alone 2 days. We have part of one of our seminars, which just kind of tries to debunk that. Has your husband said you're off for a jolly? Has your husband said you're off for a nice girls' weekend away? Is your husband thinking that you're sat here drinking champagne and Prosecco and not really doing anything productive? Does your partner, I say husband, it actually is partner, does your partner actually value the contribution that your business brings to your household, financially, but also in terms of your health and well-being and what that does as probably the primary carer in your household for everyone around you? So we do have to do a bit of mindset work as well, and helping them to understand that unless we invest in ourselves first, nothing else will thrive. Your business won't thrive. Actually, especially if you are the primary carer in your household and you are the emotional support for everybody, your family won't thrive if you are not in a strong, solid place. And running a business, whether it's a cottage industry business or a massive corporation, is stressful. Full stop. Like, it's stressful, it's complicated, it's highly rewarding, but you have got to take care. You are your biggest resource, and we spend a lot of time drumming that message in to the women that we encounter.
I want to look at again taking it, because this is just so amazing to me, to move it from £10 from a side hustle to 1.2 turnover. And I imagine taking on staff, how did you manage that? Because again, for me, I'm in year two. I was literally trying to put off taking on staff because obviously it's a cost, right?
Yes.
But in essence, the only reason why I ended up, it was almost like a forced thing, because my mom was here and my parents were here, got ill over Christmas, and I ended up being a carer. So I was trying to care, do the household, do this, do that, and run a business. And it's just like, you're not sleeping, you're waking up, you're getting up to do work, then you're doing your dealing with your parents, you're going to hospital appointments. So I thought, no, this cannot work. I literally need to do something. So I brought in a part-time bookkeeper. Again, fortunately, I have put money aside, so I was able to budget and do that. But the thing is, some of the podcasts I'm listening to, like Maxwell Leadership, and I see, like, even like, what's that guy who does conversation with a CEO or something, a direct CEO.
Bartlett,
yeah. And he definitely harps on a lot about culture, because again, coming from industry and different backgrounds, there was a lot of staff turnover, and I was like, I don't want to be that type of director where it's just about the profit, it's just about the bottom line. Yes, you want to keep costs down, but you want to retain staff and good staff as well. So for you building that business, did you encounter, or how did you deal with taking on staff and also your law fee? And how, in terms of like setting boundaries for yourself, because sometimes you kind of feel, oh, you want to get on really well, but it's like, well, you're the manager, you're the director, they're staff. So things like boundary, you know, the culture is more what I'm talking about. Developing the culture, because it's about the brand and the business, isn't it? And gives you peace of mind.
It is. So I first of all just want to encourage everybody out there. I think I've probably made every mistake out there in terms of owning and running and starting a business. And yet here we are still 10 years later. So, you know, if you don't get it right the first time, try again. That's it. Try again. Do it differently. Try harder. Fail faster. Taking on staff was accidental and forced as well, because I had never intended for it to be a business. It was only ever supposed to be me. And because of the level of service that I was providing, our reputation grew and people kept, referrals just kept coming. And for 6 months, I said, no, I'm doing my 10 hours. That's all I want. Fine. But eventually, a favourite client just appealed on behalf of a family member, and I couldn't say no to them. And so I took someone on just to work alongside me. I'm like, I'm doing my thing. You're self-employed. You're doing your thing. How about we come together? We'll work shoulder to shoulder. So that's how it started. Mm-hmm. Shoulder to shoulder, we'll cut the money. So that's why it's cut the money in half. I'll go left, you go right. And then we ended up sharing a few more clients like that. So everything was just shared. So that was number one, really easy. We're just co-workers sharing the money. But I seem to be doing a lot of the marketing and a lot of the clients seem to be coming my way.
Yeah.
She left eventually because London wasn't working for her. So she was an Italian lady, wonderful woman. Mm. But with 1 month's notice, she basically said, it's not working for me and my partner, we're going to leave. And so now I'd got this double docket of clients that I really could not manage by myself. Mm. I'd been recalled back to school to help with coaching again. So my time was really pressed and the charity was growing. And so I sort of thought, okay, well, maybe I hadn't even realized that self-employment at that point was a thing. I just thought, I have to employ someone. But what she explained to me was no, very much in the cleaning industry at this time, people are self-employed because they want freedom. They want to be able to work with a whole bevy of clients and different agencies. Mm. And so I started that search for my next person who I found. Same again, one-to-one. And we did that together for about 6 months. But she was chaotic. And I made the mistake, another black woman, I made the mistake of being friendly. So, you know, if I had a barbecue at my house, but come along, because we're co-workers at this point. Mm. But she ran late all the time. It was an absolute nightmare. And it took me ages to fight up to cut ties with her because I thought that we were friends. And I think that was lesson number one. Anyone that is going to come and work, even if it's as a co-worker or a partner, because I've had a business partner as well at some point, unless they align with your work ethic and your values, they are not for you. No matter how desperate you are, it is better for you to put clients on hold or pause and say, I am working this out, than take someone on that doesn't align with your culture. Yeah. So culture and ethics are really strong things for me. They're really strong drivers in everything I do. Our earliest strapline was do the right thing, even if no one is watching. Because that's why my business grew in the first place. You know, I was a perfectionist, and no one was ever there watching me, but I never scrimped. I never cheated on time. I never cheated on service. If I had even 5 minutes spare, I would find something to do. Right? I'd open the cutlery drawer and just give that a little surprise clean, or, you know, I'd open the linen cupboard and fold a few things in there. That was my work ethic. So when I got rid of her, I found someone else, still the same thing, but by now, when I took her on, she immediately said, I've got a friend. I like what you do. I like your ethics. I've got a friend and I'd like her to work with me. And I didn't have houses for this person. But what she told me was her story. And her story was fairly new into London. She was living in a flat share of 10 people. In some of those bedrooms, people were sharing, like bed sharing. Someone would do a night shift, someone would do a day shift, and they'd share that bed, you know, one sleep during the day, one sleep during the night. And it was just hell on earth. She'd come over with a Bulgarian company offering her work, and they had basically not paid her, or when they did pay her, it wasn't sufficient. And they were saying all sorts of things like, well, it's because we drive you, it's because we helped you come over, it's because. And so she had real suspicion around, would I actually pay her? And I'm not even going to lie, like when she rocked up to the coffee shop and saw a black woman, I could see her eyes go really big, like, oh my gosh. Yeah. But I was really blessed because she was an amazing individual and actually quite forward thinking for her culture. And she, in her own words, she'd say, you know, Bulgaria, like, we really don't see Black people in large swathes of the country. And I know that to be true now. I visited several times. So she did really well to stick it out. And her friend, very different personalities, very open, very sociable, was the same. So that worked for me. And they, again, told me all the story, all the terrible stories of what was happening for them. So I ended up having to give them my houses because I didn't know about marketing and things like that. I wasn't an agency. I was co-working with these women. Gave them all my houses because I realised, well, I've got these other two jobs that could pay my bills. This will help them pay their bills. And on we went for another couple of months when they sort of said, we need more.
Oh my gosh.
This is not my job. Go find your own houses. That's the deal. But yes, I just felt bad. And so that's really where the business was sort of haphazardly born. And they just kept, like disciples, they just kept telling their community, like, come and work for this woman. Yeah. And so I had a real kind of baptism of fire really with that. And those two, I would have considered friends. So those two definitely did the whole come to my house. Yeah. How are you doing? Chit chats, social chit chats. But by person number three, I realized I can't sustain that. And actually the stress levels in the other two jobs had risen. And so I drew different lines with everybody else. But what I did develop along with the very first lady was a robust recruitment service, which has evolved ever since. Those two went on to become paid members of staff that were part of the admin team, one in recruitment, one in sales, because actually they had a natural strength to do that. And again, they were brilliant because they were self-employed. They cleaned, so they had a full docket of cleaning clients, but as I could afford their admin fee and their employment fee, we would drop a couple of clients and increase their admin role. And so that's the thing that I would say to people. Do what you can afford at the pace that you can afford. There will be someone out there. If you can only afford to employ someone for 10 hours a week, there'll be someone out there that will really value that job. You don't need to think that when you employ someone, it has to be this full-time model. Actually, especially if you're looking at employing women, that's not necessarily the case quite often. There's a lot of people that want part-time work. There's a lot of people that if your ethics are right, will just want to align with you anyway and will understand they are growing with you. So kind of be confident about that. And again, as soon as you can do that, do that. Don't wait like you, Lillian, until you're forced to do it. Because actually the reality is if you want your business to get to over a million, it can't be with you being in your business. Exactly. You have got to create space to work on your business. You have got to create space to go away and do retreats and go away and have coaching and go away and do mastermind classes. You have got to create space to be the strategist in your business, not the worker. And actually, really, the bigger dream is that you've got to create space for you to be able to disappear from your business to do life while your business still operates and works. And that can only happen if you've got staff or a team around you, whatever model you look like. And again, it's not, you know, this was not planned with Lillian, but my biggest asset in those early days was my accountant and helping me to understand how to pay people, the employment laws, what margins I needed to create in order to make that happen. And a good accountant, I've had several bad accountants, but a good accountant, and actually it's the profit first accountants, the people that are speaking that language, will really understand what you're trying to achieve and will really enable you within that. They should be almost another member of your team that rocks up once a month or whatever and just helps you see the big picture and see the horizon. That's what I would describe an accountant.
I love it because that's what I'm trying to do as well with the clients, is that look ahead. What is the you know, I think even with one client, I said to her, because she was a, don't want to say a certain age, but it's just a case of she could retire if she wanted to. She goes, no, I want to do this as long as I can. And I said, okay, what's the plan at the end of the business? Will you sell it? Because if you're selling it, then the business needs to look like this in terms of profit, what the balance sheet, what people are going to look for if they want to buy the business. She goes, actually, no. I says, well, if that's not an issue, then fine. Continue doing what you're doing. So it's forward thinking. A lot of conversations with my clients are around cash flow, especially because of history in terms of like, yes, it's profit, but can you afford to pay yourself? Can you afford to pay your staff? Yes. Can you afford to pay your bills? And that's a big thing, that the tax obligations, can you afford to pay that? And if you can't, profit first is one of those things that says, actually, it's more looking at, yes, paying yourself, but it's actually saying, if you can't pay yourself, then there's an issue about your cost.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And you need to bring that down. And one lady that I admire so much, I'm not going to say who it is, but she took on a business. She bought the business and it was in the red severely. It is now in the black with reserves. And she did that in 1 year.
Wow.
And what she did was, she's from up north and she just was like, these costs need to go and I need to find somewhere else that can do it cheaper. And I thought, she's a bit tight. And it's no, it's not. It's profit first mentality. If I want to pay myself, see the business grow, there are some costs that are probably in the business because of the mentality that if you have a business, you need to have all these fancy stuff.
Yes.
Some of it is unnecessary. Some of it you do need, but it's about, it makes you look at your costs and say, what is it that I need to cut? And if I can't cut it because it is actually needed, I think it's a bit difficult for even me, because some costs is like, actually, I need that service because it's an extension. It gives me added value, provides added value for my costs, for my clients. So I can't cut that. The only option is to go somewhere and see if I can find it cheaper. But these are quite a good, reputable company. So I like working with them. But it's about looking at it and saying, can I go elsewhere? Is there something in there that I need to remove? Or like you say, sometimes you have people, you're having them 5 days a week. You're like, really? You might just need them for a few hours per week. Yes. And reduce that.
And that can be difficult. Those thoughts, those conversations, those processes can be really difficult. But again, if you want your business to survive, not even survive, but thrive long into the future, again, we need to be prepared to make these tough decisions. I mean, even last year with the cost of living rise, it was a terrible year for us. And we had to make some really tough decisions. Having crested a wave, gone through the million and thought, yes, we've made it. You know, just because you've made it 1 month, you've got to keep a tight rein on your numbers. I'd say the single biggest learning point that I've had in running my business. I've got to know every number in my business because it's the numbers that tell the truth. It's the numbers that tell you the story of what's going on. And so even last year, we had to put people on short working hours. I had to let people go. I had to review all senior level salaries. I had to freeze pay rises. And those aren't, you know, they're not pleasant, sexy things to do. But now we've come out of that and we've got hope for the future again because of the prudency that I had. I changed accountants last year as well because I realized my accountants had not helped me see that come coming on the horizon. So, being a business owner, it's not easy, but with the right, I'd say with the right professional team around you, as much as you can afford at the time, that will help you navigate some of these things that you maybe find challenging or uncertain. I'd also say a business coach was one of my biggest investments as well, or my biggest and best investments early on. So again, I could only afford, you know, once a month when I first took them on. Actually, they were really gracious to me. We've got a really strong working relationship. But, you know, that's what I said to him. Here's what I've got. Here's what I can afford. Here's how long I can afford it for. Can you make a change in that time? And he was brilliant. But if you can only afford to be part of a group coaching session, do that. If you can only be afford to go and do like a once a year planning session and that's all you can afford, do that. Do whatever you can afford. But don't isolate yourself into a bubble. Exactly. The more business conversations you can be having, the more likely you are to succeed long term.
You've said you've got other businesses as well and you run a charity. So what are those?
I don't run a charity. That was back then. But I've got two other businesses. So one is a tech build. I'm in the middle of that and learning all sorts of new languages about that. And again, just to say, I have got a failed tech build. And now we are on iteration number three with a whole different team. But what we realise is that the cleaning industry doesn't have really great software to help businesses plan and deploy and schedule and plug into all the important APIs that we need to, like yeah. QuickBooks or Xero for us in terms of accounting, or HubSpot in terms of CRM stuff. So we're building an end-to-end business management system for cleaning agencies that's intuitive, that's smart, like the managers that I've got in my business, that's human-centered, and that will help people measure KPIs, particularly around salary and retention, so that, you know, we can really provide a case study for, if you pay your people well and they stay, actually build your business. It's counterintuitive, but it does work. And we need nearly £1 million for that. So that's been a massive mindset mountain that I've had to overcome and learn how to pitch and do pitch decks and all of those things. So we're in the middle of that, and we're still fundraising. And then my love child, I always describe it as my love child, is something called Entrepreneurs. And it's I'm a co-founder of that with an old teaching friend. Most teachers have learned how to plan. It's part of their DNA. So we know how to do 7-year plans, 1-year plans, and then lesson by lesson plans. And a business is essentially that. A business is a series of plans, and a series of vision. You know, you could hold the big picture for, here's where we want to be in 10 years time, and you've got to break that down right down to, okay, for this week or today, what am I going to do? And so that business is around helping women create a plan that can, a plan that's going to help them achieve their dreams, however long or short term that is. And we have accountability pods that run around that. So there's a whole setup. And one of the things that we're developing, so normally we'd have quarterly away days where you come away for 2 days, do some mindset stuff, do some well-being stuff, because that's the thing that we're also not great at as women, but present, get the opportunity to present your gnarly problem, be heard by a couple of other women, and have people feed into a solution, and then time and space to develop a plan around solving that gnarly problem in the next quarter. And then two accountability buddies that leave with you. So that's the big thing that we do. But what we're developing are there smaller things that we can do around that could be maybe a 1 hour on Zoom, or a half a day in situ. We'll be developing those as the year goes.
That sounds amazing. I saw the pictures and of that on LinkedIn. I was like, oh, yes. Is that open to anybody? Can you just
find it for that? Okay. Yeah, the next one now, so June is gone essentially. The next one will be October for that. But again, look out for some of the shorter ones as well.
Yeah.
Because again, we've realized that to help a woman get the mindset that she can invest in herself for 2 days, which can often seem really big for a lot of women, we're realizing that we have to help them on that journey by maybe half a day. Then a day, then 2 days. And then you get like me, where you're like, I'm off for a week to go and invest in myself.
I think the bank holiday, I think because I've now got an assistant, it does make a difference in that.
Yes.
I feel like I can enjoy the bank holidays now. This is probably one of the first bank holidays where I've thought, I'm actually not working. I mean, I will be working probably tomorrow a little bit and then going out, but then... And you do have those weekends. I was talking in another networking event yesterday, but I think it just makes it so much more, makes me feel more at ease, not so stressed.
Yeah.
Because it is stressful running your own business, because it's like, well, this is where I earn my living. It's my bread and butter. Like, this is not just a, you know.
And if you're sick or if you're ill, then happens?
Exactly. So... I'm definitely going to check out and look out for that. I mean, you've been on this journey for some time running a business. Are there times where you have time, just downtime, to just self-reflect and just say, where is it that I want to be? Yeah.
I bake that in now. And I mean, I've got a brilliant business coach. He's been with me for 7 years, and he's also good at helping me spot the triggers, because I do forget that cyclically. But I... as far as possible, plan a 1-day retreat every quarter. I live in Sussex, and we're really fortunate with the facilities that we've got in that. And I will go, I mean, on some of these retreats, I've literally just lain on a sofa in front of a fire and slept for for a half a day because that's what my body needed. But then when I sprung up, I had a big download of stuff, or I'll go with structured things. I want to specifically think about big picture vision stuff again because I've lost sight of that, or I want to attack a gnarly problem, but always with an element of rest in there. You know, I might take a book to read, a business book or a novel, anything, but something that just helps my mind quiet down. I might listen to a podcast, I might go for a walk, I might book into a hotel for a day or a spa day and have a swim and a massage, and then so it's just the stuff that I know my mind, body and soul need to help the creative juices start to flow. So I'll do that quarterly. We have a quarterly day with the admin team as well, where we kind of dreamscape again. I remind them of the big vision, and we kind of drill down into what does that look like for this quarter. Last year, for the first time ever, I went away alone on holiday for 2 weeks, and it changed my life. I've since running this business, I haven't had more than a week's holiday, like sequentially. So it's been a week here, a week there, a day here, a day there. But 2 weeks was a game changer. And so that's my new rule now, that I need between 12 and 14 day breaks once a year, where my body learns to forget work. So it de-works almost. I've got a good 5 days where I'm just free. And then my mind naturally seems to start to pick up work again. But then with, again, creative big vision stuff. And doing it alone. So that was a big thing last year. But actually, I realized I'm serving so many people all the time. I just need to be on my own agenda, only worrying about me. That's it. No, the only decision I have to make is what rum cocktail am I having next? And what time shall I go for dinner? So I'd say it's really, really vital. And now I've got two accountability women, one of which is my co-founder, and we go away 4 times a year as well. It used to be just overnight, now it's 4 days, because we knit all these things and we hot seat each other and we drill down into everything, family, love life, work life, anything that is a problem and is rattling around there. And those are brilliant. So I invest a lot in myself now. And it's because if I don't, I know that I will burn out. And I'm single as well, so I don't have anyone at home that is watching my energy levels.
So you have to be intentional in that.
That's right. I have to be intentional and accountable to others.
I mean, as well, in terms of like the business, you mentioned what you've got planned for the future. Are there new things that you've got in mind to do, or that you're thinking, well, I want to look at that, but I'm not sure?
I always said I will never run a business. I'm not entrepreneurial and I'm not creative, but yes, I do. I have another. So my end game is to start a foundation for kids exiting the care system. I was a looked after child. And it's again, all around financial literacy and health. I want to be a grant making foundation for anyone that's got an entrepreneurial spark, and to give them mentoring, advice, and a small grant to see if they can kind of follow my story, you know, turn that from £10 to £1 million or whatever it is, whatever the grant is, but to help them multiply that with all of the support that they need around them. So that's probably my big dream.
That's amazing. But yeah, thank you so, so much. It's been such an interesting podcast episode. I feel like we can talk and talk and talk. I'm like,
but
it's been amazing. And you've just been so inspiring. You know, don't know you long. I've just been following. I feel like a stalker sometimes, following people on Instagram. But it's just so, just amazing, inspiring. I mean, what is your encouragement to even like some individuals who maybe in teaching thinking, actually, I'm doing it just to pay the bills. I feel like I'm just stuck and I don't know which way to go, whether I need to start a business. That feeling of just being stuck, but I know this isn't it. I mean, what would be your encouragement or advice be for someone like that or people like that?
I'd say, particularly if you're sort of middle-aged like me, that life is too short. Life is too short to just keep being a hamster on a wheel. That in this day and age, we have got more transferable skills than we possibly realize. So to explore that and to invest in yourself and book a session with a life coach or a business coach or someone that can help you see beyond your circumstances and take it from there.
Amazing. I think that's really good advice. I think thank you so, so much. And on that note, I'm just going to bring it down to a close. We were speaking to the lovely Antoinette Daniel from Just Helpers, CEO, director of Just Helpers. And this has been a conversation with a Black businesswoman. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so, so much, Antoinette.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.